It's Tuesday the 24th of January and you're listening to the Red Army Rounder. I'm your host Paul Hinnington and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Good evening, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And we're going to take a look back at a mixed bag weekend for the Devils again this week before having a little look at, well, the main talking point around the league. Eric Nielsen getting friendly with some Fife fans. Preview the coming weekend for the Devils. The sellout, Monday sellout against Nottingham. And then trip up to Fife. And then we're going to round off with a little look, with a bit of talk and new signings going on with the Devils around the one play that we would take in, you know, in a bit of a fantasy world to add to the team that we think would see us over the line. So kicking off, and Saturday night, the Devils, for a change, were playing Coventry. Doesn't happen very often. And Sean, you're the only one of us there. It was a bit of a high-scoring game, 7-5 Devils, but I think you know, quite a lot of talk, stuff to talk about in the game. You know, referee Stephen Hogarth came in for a fair amount of criticism, I think it's safe to say online.
Yeah, a bit of a high-scoring game, as you said. Back to the sort of 80s-style hockey, finished 7-5. And as you said, Stephen Hogarth was a subject to a bit of a stick on social media. I'm not one to blast the referees, and I'll very rarely do it when we lose, to be quite honest with you. But I'm glad we won, because I can say that he was genuinely atrocious. And there's no two ways to go about it. It was a very, very poor display from the referee. The linesman as well, not at their best. Coventry seems to be a place where the linesmen go to, go to earn their stripes, to go back to the EPL, to be quite honest with you. They never seem to be very good up there, but that's probably because they can't see the blue lines. So, yeah, good to see the Devils get scoring. A lot of mixed scorers in there. Lane Elmer finding his scoring stick, getting a hat-trick, and a good hat-trick as well, let's be quite honest. Some very, very clinical finishes. Some good play from Jake Morissette, managed to get a 3-point night. Sean Benevoli got 3 assists. And like I said, just really good to get the scoring juices flowing through the team. And yeah, more than happy with that. It was quite an exciting back and forth game. And it's nice to have a big scoring game now and again.
Yeah, definitely. Not a night for defences, but you know, always good for all the
goalies.
Fans.
All goalies.
All goalies, yeah, definitely not. Yeah, I dread to think what the save percentages there would look like. The first 5 minutes saw the opening 4 goals shared between the two teams. Did that just set the tone for the night then? All a bit sloppy, or, you know, I don't know really. It just seems, I've got to be honest, I was looking at home thinking, I go to Coventry all the time, you know how the games are going to run, and then saw, you know, goal after a minute, 2 after 2, 3 after 3, 4th after 5 minutes. I was thinking, this carries on all night. I'm going to be devastated that I'm not there. Obviously, it didn't, but it definitely set the tone. And the new lines make a difference, did you think, Sean?
Yeah, definitely. I think splitting Sean Benevolio and Lane Elmer up made a big difference. You got, obviously, they're still playing some power play time together, but you got Lane Elmer out there with Matthew Myers, and Matthew Myers seemed to work well with Lane Elmer. That size sort of, Myers' physical aspect sort of brought a lot to Lane Elmer, but, you know, created a fair bit of space for him, got his stuff into good scoring areas, and yeah, the mix-up in the lines, good to see. Obviously, we're missing Chris Culligan and Andrew Lord slots back into the lineup, David Bryan absent as well. But yeah, good to see the switch around, and it really did get some guys going, and yeah, good to see the guys finding some scoring form.
Aaron, not one thing to give you, not to blow you into trumpet, but you've mentioned a few times over the recent weeks, possibly even longer, that you'd like to have seen Elmer and Benevolio split up, because they're the two that have played together. So it must have been good from your point of view on the podcast to see the vindication of that with, you know, such strong performances from both.
Prove my point exactly. You split them up, Elmer scores an hat trick, Benevolio gets 3 assists, and it just worked out for the better. Although, like, 2 of the goals were power play goals, when they played together. It just seemed they seemed to have a lot more going. Each other's playing on different lines. They seemed to work better with other people. And I think we waited too long to realize this, and now it's like we should have done it sooner, because everyone else got moved about and up down lines and stuff like that. And so why wait until now to do it for those two guys? And I'm glad they finally done it, and I'm glad it's working, and I've proven right. I do know some stuff.
It does happen now and again. I think one major point in that, Paul, is the Aaron made the point that they did play together on the power play, and just thinking about it in some sort of perspective, when they played in Asiago, they were probably part of the best team in the Italian league, and when they were playing together 5-on-5, Asiago were still, you know, the best team in Italy, and it probably got that they were maybe coasting against some teams and still scoring the points, whereas they've come over here and playing together, they haven't really elevated their game. So playing on the power play with each other has given them that extra breathing space, which they had playing at 5-on-5 in Italy. And then just having guys to elevate their game, such as Joey Martin and all that sort of aspect of it, maybe finally brought up the best in them.
Yeah, you're really good point. And I think there can't be many, there probably isn't a player in the league that wouldn't be elevated by having Joey Martin on their line anyway. Yeah, so, well. Definitely a good thing. Looking at the second period, and the Devils, it appears, came out flying minute in. Joey Martin gets a goal. Lionel gets two.
What a goal as well.
Joey Martin's goal was
beautiful. The pass, the bit of play from Andrew Hawthorne was incredible. He literally dangled over the blue line, undressed the defenceman, managed to backhand it through to Martin on the break, who just deep Brian Stewart out of his skin. I think his jockstrap was in the ceiling somewhere.
This is why Sean should be commentating.
Just wanted to put that out there. It was an incredible goal.
Incredible goal. And within 8 minutes, Lionel Murray completed his hat-trick, and he'll put the Devils in a commanding 5-2 lead, which, from looking at the game sheet, is where things started to melt down a little bit. I quite quickly, thanks to the wonders of social media and people maybe filming off things that they shouldn't be filming off. Joey Martin got a 5+ game for checking to the head, which I guess if a call could sum up a bad performance, I think it's that one. I dread to think how you all reacted in the stands. It's a family sport. I'm sure it wasn't at the time, but two players between shoulder to shoulder, Martin's arm comes up afterwards, and I watched it and carried on watching, thinking, wait a minute,
when is the check coming?
And I just think, oh, somehow that was a game on.
Ludicrous. Criminal. Absolutely criminal to make that call.
Yeah, and after that then, it just seemed like a run of, minor penalties for the Devils. Mm. Sort of looking at the score sheet, I think it was a power play goal and then a 5-on-3 goal. So the Blaze managed to get...
They managed to score on the last end of the power play, so it took count that they were still on the power play when they scored. There was 1 second remaining on that second penalty.
The perfect time to score, mind, if you're going to...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's, we were literally praying. We just said to each other, we think they're going to score you, but just please let it be on the end of that first penalty. And 1 bloody second. 1 second! Yeah, and also the Devils got themselves in a bit of Andrew Hotham got an unsportsmanlike conduct for a dive, and then Scott Hotham got a misconduct penalty 2 minutes later, showing their frustration at a tripping call on Jake Morissette, which was overturned. He was going to call the plays for diving and Morissette for tripping, and then only put Morissette in, and Scott Hotham lost his rag, like most of us did in the stands. I think we would have all got abusive official penalties in the stands.
We were killing penalties, missing both Hothams and Joey Martin, who obviously racks up. Well, Joey Martin and Andrew Hotham, who probably...
And Jake Morissette.
And Jake Morissette. So that is far marker.
That is a huge penalty kill unit.
Yeah, that is the unit. So, and we also had the issue of, I think, with Joey Martin's penalty, they made a player on the ice sit his 5 minutes, which
yeah.
is obviously the wrong call when you sit in a penalty for a player being thrown. So you'll be without Doucette for 5 minutes, who admittedly doesn't kill a lot of penalties, but you know, neither do you know your fourth line Brits. So I know you'd rather have on the bench, but yeah. So after that, I really nearly swore that, and I wasn't even there. So that's how much it bothered me. Devils only had a 1-goal lead, and I'm sure, Sean, that there was quite a lot of worry after those 2 goals, or
yeah, was it just I was nervous. I thought that the referee was going to kill the game. It was just in my mind that we had dominated, literally pulled the Blues to pieces. They were short benched. We pulled them to pieces, and it was plain sailing. And then we got into penalty trouble, and I thought we were going to lose our heads.
But instead, at the start of third, a beautiful pass from Patrick Bordeleau, someone who, not really racking up the points, but fed through Jake Morissette, another player who's a player who's been a bit out of form, to get a goal. And yeah, again, another power play brought Coventry back into it before Scott Hotham sealed it towards the end. The third period, Sean, a bit more plain sailing in terms of both, you know, not getting into penalty trouble, you know, and having them just flowing a bit better for the Devils.
Yeah, for sure. I spent most of the third period in one of the Blaze blocks, just out of pure entertainment, really. And when they got it back to one again, I was sort of rocking back and forth, hoping that it would end quite soon. Luckily, Scott Hotham gave me a bit of a release when he managed to score and make it a 2-goal game again, and I was able to just keep causing chaos there. So that was great fun. Love me in the Blaze block. Yeah, fan relations executive. I'm writing the job now. That's my job.
A bit of entertainment qualifies as going off to sit with a female fan. That's what we're calling it now.
Lately.
Every arena, yeah.
Even the elderly ones.
The elderly teams will take that as. So, yeah, what turned out in the end to be a good win for the Devils? Lane Ulmer picking up man of the match with, you know, understandably after scoring a hat-trick. I don't think anyone will ever go into an away rink, score a hat-trick and not be man of the match. So, yeah, a decent night. And I think a banana skin tie that we mentioned last week could have been difficult. And then with the penalty troubles we run into, you know, definitely a game that was there to lose. So good win for the Devils and a bit of a confidence boost running into Sunday.
They really missed some bodies in that game of Coventry. They missed, like, Kevin Noble, obviously didn't play, and that's the guy who logs them a lot of minutes, and they look very tired. And there's no bench, obviously.
Three starting D-men, was it? I think.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Nice D-men, anyway. So.
Crazy, you know. Yeah.
And just one of those games where 5-2, that many players down, could have been such an easy night for the Devils to conserve a little bit of energy, but didn't end up being that way. You know, with the goals that they got back with the penalty trouble. Which potentially showed the following night when Sheffield came in and ran out 4-3 victors. You wouldn't have thought it to start the game, though. Aaron, with an explosive 5 minutes from the Devils, you know, rammed it off with a cracking goal from Scott Hotham, assisted from Lane Ulmer.
Yeah, exactly, Paul. You know, as far as recent home performances go, that was easily 5 to 10 minutes of the best we've seen. And like you said, Alma fed Scott Hotham beautifully in the slot, found him at the back door, and it was 1-0. And I thought, you know, we could be in for a night of making a 6-0 against the Steelers. But, you know, we dipped in pace and a little bit of form towards the end of the period, and it all went up in the air from there on in.
All went up in the air, and it started 10 minutes in. And I genuinely, like, you can almost pinpoint the moment when it went wrong, which 10 minutes, 7 seconds in, where admittedly there was a bit of a hold in the build-up to the play, but referee Tom Donnell let the play flow most of the night. I didn't disagree with many of his calls. Didn't have a problem with the way you have to read the game at all. Actually, I thought it made it a lot more entertaining. But Jonathan Phillips, you know, showed what a danger he is in and around the net, even now. you know, logging lower line minutes, but you know, still knows exactly where the net is. And tied the game up for the Steelers. And I just, at that time, just felt that a bit of impetus went out of the Devils. And less than 3 minutes John Armstrong had put the Steelers into the lead, Sean. And it just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like the Devils had lost the game there.
Yeah. Yeah, can't disagree. It was, as you said, that opening sort of 7-8 minutes was exceptional, and we got a bit away from that, let Sheffield get one, and we were still involved in the game. We had some good chances, but we didn't show that sort of intensity that we did. We weren't banging bodies left, right and centre, and we didn't really match Sheffield's work rate. And I thought going into the first tie would have been a fair reflection of how it had gone, but they managed to come up with that extra one, and the two goals in the space of like 3 minutes basically killed us off. And and it didn't get any better going into the second period with Colton Freder grabbing, and again, he just scores nice goals, Colton Freder. It's something in his blood. He just loves scoring a great goal. And 16 seconds into the second period, Sheffield have got three answered goals. They've got a two-goal lead, and it's plain sailing for them. We're right up against it.
Indeed, most definitely. But, you know, credit to the Devils. Kept plugging away. Got a goal back through Lane Olmer, but, you know, maybe a minute or two beforehand, the atmosphere in the rink had been lifted with Patrick Borlo laying out a monster of a hit. You know, it was a hit that I expected to get called, but there was nothing that could be called on it, just a big, strong, powerful hit. You know, not into the boards, nothing wrong with it, and lifted the crowd up. I think it was Davian that chased him off the ice, tied him up all the way back to the benches, and somehow he wasn't called on it. You know, as I said, it was Darnell, the way he refereed the game. But you know, Borlo obviously wasn't looking for a fight. Zach Fitzgerald got involved once he was tied up. But that lift really carried through when Lane Olmer got the goal assisted from Patrick Asselin 6 minutes in. That was it for the second period in terms of scoring it. But looking at the game sheet, the Devils had 5 shots on goal to the Steelers 13. So really sort of shows the one-sidedness of the game in terms of shots on goal, in terms of chances, and I think in terms of zone time as well, the way the second period went. We discussed at the end of the second, Sean, that we really couldn't see where the Devils were going to get a win from, to the way the game was going. And when Colton Freder got his power play goal, his second of the night, 5 minutes into the third, it just felt like that was the death knell for our chances.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. We looked flat, and we let that goal in, and it just killed us. We'd had a tough game in terms of the penalty trouble in Condrey the night before, and we hadn't played all that badly. We'd maybe eased off, but Sheffield just took their chances with a more clinical team, and ultimately, Andrew Hotham gets one with just over a minute and a half left to give us that lifeline, but it's just not enough. Sheffield with a better team on the night, and full credit to them. They completely deserved the victory. Nothing to do with the refereeing, which I've seen all over social media. They deserved it, point blank.
Yes, yeah, they definitely did. Andrew Hotham's goal. Obviously, we had Ben Bams pulled at the time.
Did we? I couldn't quite make my mind up whether he was pulled or not pulled.
Yeah, neither could Andrew and Jamie Elson, who were both giving conflicting advice at various stages, one waving him off, one waving him back as we turned the puck over, to try and sort it out. Interestingly enough, that Hotham goal isn't listed as a power play on the game sheet, but it would have been a 6-on-4 goal because Levi Nelson had taken a penalty about a minute and a half earlier, so it doesn't stop it being a power play goal, the fact Ben Bams won him. Brave of the Devils, 3 minutes out from the end. Took advantage of the extra skater there and then, so went 6-on-4. A minute and a half, we got Bams back out of net to try and get another empty net goal. But it wasn't coming, and then the last 30 seconds, a stick comes up towards Scott Hotham and he just grabs it with his hand, and it's just a penalty all day long. This is the most easy thing that Darnell had to call all night, and he got it right, and that really did kill the game off then. We weren't going to be getting back into it with a shorthanded in 30 seconds. So a really disappointing night, but not really disappointing. You know, it was a good game of hockey. It was an enjoyable game of hockey. You know, again, we were saying earlier in the season, it's the two best teams in the league, but I think Belfast has shown that they can be, you know, both of our equals on their night. But two really good teams as a great advert for hockey. And, you know, we are still 5-1 against them this season. And sure, we'd have all bitten each other's hands off if we were offered that. But
oh, of course, yeah. Of course.
Just a bit of a sense of disappointment that, you know, yet again that lead's been cut. And yet again, you feel like we maybe had something in the tank. And it was still only a one-goal game, Aaron.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the, I think, the most disappointing thing of it. You know, we didn't play to our full potential. Sheffield seemed to play to theirs, and it was still only a one-goal game. It just makes me think, if we had that little bit more goal, maybe if Culligan and Briner wasn't injured, you know, we could have walked away and we could have been 6-0, but, you know, it's the way the season goes. You're not going to go all season without losing a game, and it's just unfortunate that we had to lose to them. Don't like them.
And sure, it's really interesting, and it's, you know, it's been, you know, across Devil's social media, your websites, and, you know, in ourselves, you know, we spoke on the night, we've spoken, you know, before the show, you know, since the game. There just feels a real sense, a downer on the Devils' title chances. We are still top of the table. We're, you know, we're a point clear from Belfast with a game in hand. We're 4 clear from Sheffield. They've got a game in hand. They play each other this weekend. There's got to be points dropped there. It's not doom and gloom, but, and even as I'm saying it, I don't feel that excitement. And it's strange. And I don't know, or can you put your finger on the reason that you think, as a fan base, we're feeling that at the moment?
I think it's just the pressure. It's something that we've wanted, all of us, for such a long time. And I just think that we're maybe over-expecting. I think we are expecting to win every game. And you listen to Ben Bounds' post-game interview, and he nails it. And as soon as he says the fans expect us to win every game, and there's a bit of, you know, there's an air of arrogance in the air that we haven't quite earned, which Sheffield have won a lot of league titles, a lot of trophies, and they've earned the right to have that arrogance, and we haven't. And I instantly thought of myself, I'm not stupid enough to think we're going to win every game this year, but I'm incredibly disappointed when we lose, and I feel like it's the end of the world, that we're not going to win the title. But like you said, we're still in pole position. If games in hand go in our favour, we're still, I think it's 2 points clear of Sheffield with games in hand. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's the one. 2 points clear of the game.
Yeah, and as Aaron said, you are not going to go unbeaten all year, and especially not against a team as good as the Steelers. If you sweep the Steelers, you're going to win the league, plain and simple. And we still got 2 games against them in their building later on in the year. Then, when it comes to that stage, Sheffield could be out of it, Belfast could be out of it, we could be out of it. Who knows? It's tit for tat. Next week we'll get 4 points. Sheffield and Belfast will get 2 points each. We'll be 4 points clear and everything will be rosy. It's the nature of sport. We're under the pressure. We're feeling it. But I'd much rather be feeling that pressure than be fourth, fifth, making up the playoff places.
Most definitely. And I think that's probably the thing with it being so tight is that every loss, you can see how much it means in the league table with how close everyone is.
Sheffield aren't going to go unbeaten the whole year. They're going to lose to someone. A game that we lost in Fife, they could lose in Fife. A game that we won in Brea, they could lose in Brea. Sport's a weird thing. It's a weird, weird thing.
Most definitely. While you were talking, I think, to almost answer my own question, it's the reason of the air, that air of despondency. And I can't remember the last time it happened. We've lost 3 games on the bounce at home. We have only dropped 4 points in doing it. But I think, you know, the majority of fans are only seeing home games. they're the ones that stick in the memory, and you know that's going to be something to do with it. That's what you're seeing is those three losses. You know, and it as you said, it with this expectation, it does hurt when you lose the home games. And yeah, interestingly, the bounce thing about the sense of arrogance that we haven't deserved, or that we haven't earned, because yeah, I think that's a really valid point. But you know, Aaron, that sort of sense and is in the building. The expectations there, maybe the arrogance is there in the fans. Should it be having that level of effect on the players, do you think, or should they be able to just wash over it and still be able to do their own thing?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a bit of a, one of those people, but at the end of the day, I know pressure gets to everyone, but they're getting paid to do a certain job, and some of the guys aren't up to scratch, and they're not doing their job at the moment, and whether there's down to pressure or other things, outside influences, I don't know, but I think it's just disappointing that we all say that this team has so much more to offer, and we only see it in drips and drabs. I just want to see a few full 60-minute performances among teams and the players scoring goals that we know can score goals, as they've done it already. Like, I'm not picking out Lane Elmer because I think he's done bad, because at the moment he's one of my favourite players in the team, but if you take him, for instance, he had a dry spell, and then come Saturday, he scored an hat-trick, and 2 weeks ago he had like 9 points in three games. So, it seems to be with nearly every player in the team, it's just coming in drips and drabs instead of one solid weekend, because I think we've only had one or two weekends where, well, it's probably more than one or two, but we've only had a couple of weekends where we've actually taken a four-point weekend. And, a couple of years ago, when we won the Challenge Cup, we was doing that. We'd done that for like 5 or 6 weeks straight, and it's just frustrating. Like, we all beg for consistency, and it's one thing we're not getting at the moment, and I think that's what's winding a lot of people up as well.
Yeah, I think that's another good point around the consistency, and you players going hot and cold. Guido Set went cold for a long time, had a big scoring streak, he's gone a bit cold again, but I think sort of it's corresponded this time where a few players have maybe dried up, and the goals aren't coming as freely as they were early in the year for quite a few players, and then that thing of pressure, just you grip the stick a little bit tighter, and when you get one, they start to come, as you said, Lane Elmer's seen now over the last couple of games. But we haven't done Player of the Week, and I'm going to go for this, as I just said his name, and my pick is the guy who got 4 goals. You're great to see him finding the scoring touch, so my vote goes to Lane Elmer. Sean, who gets your pick?
I'm going to go with Sean Bedivoglio. Lane Elmer is my second pick. I thought he had a great weekend. It was really, really good to see him scoring. But Bedivoglio worked really, really hard this weekend, and a lot of the play relating to Elmer's goals came from his work rate, and I just thought he had a really good weekend. Scored had 3 points in Coventry and worked really hard on Sunday, I feel, and just didn't quite get the luck of the bounces, wasn't confident in himself enough to get a good shots off, but I think he worked really hard and was up to his game the last couple of weeks.
Anyway, credit to Benville, who picked up the first assist on Hotham's last goal, where the puck had been bouncing around for a fair while, so was definitely willing to get in there and stuck in. But Aaron, who I feel like, given what you've already said about your favourite player at the moment, it may be a foregone conclusion, but do we have a Player of the Week this week?
We do. I agree with you, Paul. I think, not taking anything away from Bedivoglio, like Sean said, he's been phenomenal the last couple of weeks, and he put points up again this weekend and key points, but for me, it's Lane Elmer. He had his hat-trick. He scored again on Sunday. Had a beautiful assist on Scott Hotham's goal. And I thought his game was really up the ante and he's playing a lot better. But I think I should get Player of the Week because I've been saying for weeks that they shouldn't play together. When they didn't play together, they both got first and second picks and player of the week. It goes me, Lane Elmer, and Sean Bendavolio.
Aaron, I can't give you that because as he's won player of the week, he has proven that there ain't nobody like Lane Elmer.
Yeah, that's that one.
Congratulations to Lane Elmer. Oh, I do love a bit of cheese from now and again. Whilst we're still talking about last weekend, there've been a couple of DOPS reviews announced, which we're obviously waiting on the outcome for. We knew that Joey Martin was going to be reviewed because he somehow got that 5+ game penalty for checking to the head. I think we've talked about it enough that there was nothing. And if that penalty, I think even if that penalty stands as a 5+ game, DOPS needs to take a look at themselves because that has to be downgraded. Ridiculous if it doesn't.
Downgraded to what? To what? What are you going to give for it? Completely abolish it, I think, is the word you're looking for.
All right, Mr. Pedantic. You can downgrade something to nothing. Jeez. Well, we got the dictionary police out over here. Right, I'm going to tread lightly. I think Andrew Hoffman reviewed for a call, Sean. He got 2 minutes for boarding, and Sheffield have requested a supplementary review. They obviously feel that it was worse. There was a push in the back from Andrew Hotham into those, and Dowd flew right face first. He went gloves first into the boards, and then he went in with a fair bit of pace to give him credit. It wasn't like he tapped the boards. And he was down on the ice receiving treatment for a while. He did sort of convulse around a little bit, which, like when a wrestler in fake wrestling gets hurt and they jump around a bit to show that it really hurt. It was that type of thing. I've never actually seen it on a real thing.
Cristiano Ronaldo of ice hockey.
A Cristiano Ronaldo-esque jiggle around. Sean, it definitely was a penalty. Huh? Do you think... And given that it went into the boards, is it a good review from Sheffield? Is it going to see an upgrade or a ban for Hotham?
It depends. If he headbutted the boards if he headbutted the glass as he went into it, then you'll get about a 10-match ban, I suspect. It's hard to say. I think it was a penalty. Do I think it was worth a game penalty? No, not particularly. He does give him a bit of a nudge, and I think it. But I think he just hits the boards if Hotham nudges him, and I think we'll get a game because we're playing. It's just going to happen. Hotham's due to be suspended this year, and it'll happen. Was it a bad hit? I don't think so. Was it a bit late? Yes. Did it cause injury on the play? If you believe Robert Dowd, then yes, it did. I can see why it'll get a game, to be honest with you. And we play Nottingham as well, so it's going to be a tougher weekend if it comes to that.
Yeah, Aaron, your thoughts on it? Do you think there will be, do you think there should be a ban for it?
I don't think it should be a ban because it wasn't that serious, but I think if it is a ban, I can see why it would be a ban. It was just like if anyone goes into the boards at that pace, whether he fell gloves first, face first, shoulder first, whatever, it's gonna hurt. To be honest, I don't think Dowd expected the shove or knew Hotham was there, and it just gave him that extra bit of force to go into the boards. So even if he did milk it, it looked painful to me, and if that was me, I'd probably roll around like a man who's just been shot 7 times. So I can, but that's just my opinion. But I can see if it would be a ban. It was a little bit nasty and unnecessary and late. So there's that. But do I think it's worthy of one? No, definitely not. It was, it was just what Hotham does. He's that type of player. He'll get under your skin by doing things like that. And if if Robert Dowd did take advantage of it, then that's up to him. But I'd like to think he didn't.
But interestingly, it was requested by Paul Thompson that his players embellish a little bit more. So, you know, it's not out there to suggest that maybe Robert Dowd did when your coach has publicly asked you to do it. So,
yeah,
you know, not cast aspersions on Dowd. They're much, much more of an issue with Paul Thompson saying it, I think.
Is that just a quick thing on that, Paul? Is that the way the game is going? You know, you listen to football pundits now, and if a player gets a touch on the leg in the penalty box, they say he's got to go down there. He's got to go down for the penalty. Is that the way the game's going?
It probably is. I think it's just the way everything's going, isn't it? It's that, you know, element of win at all costs. It's that, you know, the gamesmanship that's seeping into most sports now around, you know, you've seen in things like rugby where, you know, you probably didn't see that for a long time. That's becoming in a little bit more recently. So it wouldn't surprise me to see it. You know, coaches are under a lot of pressure. You don't win a championship for a couple of years or a year in Sheffield and you're gone. And if you think your players feel a contact in the back and they go down, that could get you over the line. Well, you're not really going to tell them not to, are you? You know, your job is on the line at the end of the day. So it's sad to see. You know, if that's the way it goes, then it's disappointing. It's one of the things that really turned me off from being a football fan. You know, what, 10, 15 years ago, I stopped properly watching football because of that. So really, really wouldn't like to see it, but I do worry that you may be right.
What was your thought on the hit in any case?
I thought the call was correct. I thought 2 minutes. I think I expected there to be. Well, I didn't see it live. To be fair, I saw him go into the boards. Didn't see the contact. Just based solely on the contact, I expected a 2-10 or a game. You know, the way he went into the boards. Seeing the replay, I think the call was probably right. I wouldn't have argued if he'd had a 2-10. I've got a feeling it'll be one of those where Dobbs put it to a 5+ game to put it on his records. But there's not a ban. That, you know, if I was a betting man, I'd be putting money on a 5+ game being added to Hotham's record from it. So yeah, that's what we think. We'll see what happens. In terms of being a betting man on what people are going to get, what is going to happen to Erik Nielsen? This is the big question. Haven't seen any footage of it, but there's no benches, there's no plexiglass behind the 5 benches, and the varying stories, but I think it boils down to Nielsen squirted water up, a man threw a pint down, Nielsen climbed up and started throwing punches. He had a match penalty, obviously. He sat one game on Sunday. Sean, your thoughts on it, but surely no place for it in the game, and where do you see Dobbs coming down on this?
Yeah, as you said, no place for it in the game. In terms of Erik Nielsen, I would, in fairness, if someone threw a pint over at Joey Martin, I'd want him to give him a clout as well. Anybody, to be quite honest with you. But you just can't do it in the game. You just can't do it. You're professional players. I know it's not in your job description to have beer thrown over you, but it's also not in your job description to go and punch people in the face if they do. So it'll be sad. I think he will get suspended. It'll be a sad thing to happen, but it's the right thing to happen. You cannot get into altercations with the fans. It just doesn't happen. And if the league let him get away with it, it makes them look bush league, to be quite honest with you. I'd fight his corner. I wouldn't want it to happen to any of our guys, and I feel for him, but he's got to be punished for it. And it's just for the good of the image of the league, if you like. And the fans should also be banned as well from Fife. Just putting out there, it should work both ways.
Most definitely. If he's thrown something onto the bench, and you know, I think if he'd have been actually physically assaulted Nielsen first, I would say he still needs to have a ban, but it would be much. A pint isn't the same as a fan attacking a player. So, you know, in terms of levels, there's levels of everything, and I think that's the difference in this one. But yeah, that fan has to be banned if he's thrown a pint at Nielsen. No question in it. Aaron, your thoughts on it? Where do you think Dobbs should be looking at this? Is it a couple of games? Are we looking double figures?
For me, a guy that no one ever seems to agree with. A guy that people mostly like dislike. David Sims said it. He tweeted, and I thought what he said was quite true. You know, I know Eric Nielsen shouldn't react the way he did, but you know, it's and I know he doesn't get paid to get pints chucked on him, but at the end of the day, if someone chucked a pint on me, no matter who it was or where it was, I'd probably turn around and have a similar reaction. So you just see red, and he shouldn't have done it, but the DOPS are there to protect players. So I think hopefully, like, that situation, DOPS should be looking at the club and trying to reinforce something that deters the fans being able to do something like that, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous, like, that they're able to do something like that. It's pathetic. But then you can look at to the incident that happened with Boris Valabik in the tent last year, where he squirted water over fans. I know that there was no reaction, like punches thrown or anything, but I don't think he's seen a ban. But he got his thing, so he got his ejection, and that was it. And I hope it's the same for Nielsen, because I don't think he should be banned for reacting for someone chucking a pint over him. I think he served his match. Hopefully he would have learned his lesson, but I don't think he should sit a ban for it.
Interesting, because obviously you said that the fan threw the pint, you'd have reacted similarly. But the fact that Nielsen had thrown water at the fan first, so if we're running on escalations being okay, if he's thrown a drink at the fan, why can't the fan throw a drink back at the player? I know beer and water isn't the same, but it's what he had in his hand. If he'd had a cup of water in his hand and thrown it back at Nielsen, is it different? It's the same thing. You know, the fan still shouldn't have done it, but Nielsen did make that, you know, I'm not saying that the fan was sat there quietly not saying anything or doing anything, but, you know, so if Nielsen threw the water first, then it's escalated from there, not from the fan. I do feel for him a bit. It's one of those things that they're, and it's not tiring all five fans by the same brush. I've been to five three times, I think, never had a problem there. The fans are really nice, actually. You've had some really good chats with five fans. But it's consistently the one rink where you see things about problems with fans. I know a few years ago, you know, a friend of mine, his young daughters, like I think they were early teens, were presenting Man of the Match in Fife, and they were getting abuse shouted at them from the Fife fans behind the bench. And just things like that, you think, not a culture there, but it's almost allowed that these things keep happening, and is action being taken? So it's interesting. I think Nielsen's looking at a 5 to 10. I'm not sure where it's going to come down, but if it's less than 5, I'd be very surprised. But yeah, you just can't do it. And as Sean said, for the image of the league, even if the fan is the instigator, even if the water wasn't thrown from Nielsen first, the first physical action was from Nielsen, and as a league, if you let that stand, it's not going to encourage it. That, you know, it's not like hitting to the head where you've got to do it as a discouragement. It's just the way it plays in the press, the way it looks. I'm surprised that it hasn't really caught on. Things like this quite often get shared around, you know, on social media. It becomes quite a big thing in the hockey world, but which luckily it hasn't. But I think if no ban was at the end of it, there's a lot more chance of that happening. So, yeah, that's what I think is coming down. But, you know, definitely an interesting thing. First time, it's the first time I can remember that happening, Sean. Obviously, you've been watching a similar amount of time with me. I can't remember, you know, a physical altercation with players, you know, making it, you know, being made public.
Really?
Am I being stupid?
Yeah.
In the tent. Yeah, and you know, that one was the other way around, in that it was the Devils fan had got through a security barrier and had started the altercation. And I can't remember what happened to Olsen.
No, I can't either. It was a long time ago now.
Yeah, we are looking at a fair few years, but, you know, and in that case, I had no problem with Olsen at all. Whatever happened to that fan, the fan had been somewhere he shouldn't have been and was making contact. So tough luck. I just think this one's slightly the other way around in that he was still where he was supposed to be in the ring. So yeah, but a difficult one for Dobbs. That'll be a really difficult one for them. You can't be checking a casebook for things like this. So will be interesting to see. Onwards to this weekend, and we're recording on Tuesday night, and the Devils game against Nottingham on Saturday has been sold out for over 24 hours already. If you ever want an indication of where our club has come to, that is it. And you know, we've just talked about there might be a bit of doom and gloom around at the moment, but it's not affecting ticket sales. We are still top of the league, and this is another clash against a top club. Not where they want to be in the league. Definitely didn't have a weekend that they want. Only 1 point after losing to Belfast and on a shootout to Fife. But they've got our number this year, Sean, and we're not in for an easy night again in front of a sellout crowd, are we?
Absolutely not. And like I said before, we do not historically do well in front of sellout crowds. But there's always exceptions to the rule. I hope we change it. We are due a result in front of our home fans. You mentioned the bit of doom and gloom. It is mainly coming from the vast majority, I think, of the fan base, because, as you said, we've lost three at home on the bounce, and, you know, we've discussed it about being top of the league. We've been on the road. We went to Brayhead. I was at Coventry on the weekend. We've seen our team play well, and that I think that's where the seeds of optimism have started to sprout from us, is that we have seen our team get good results, and this is the time now for the team to show that they're really made of steel and go out there and get a result in front of the home fans, who deserves a top-notch performance from them.
Most definitely, I think that sums it up. But you know, still a dilemma for Andrew Lord, Aaron, in terms of coaching, and you're finding a way to break down Nottingham and getting the win.
Yeah, well, as long as Lord's been coaching, it seems to be that Nielsen has been out coaching him the last couple of years, and it doesn't seem to be getting any different this season. We had that win over them. But other than that, it's been a struggle against them. And, you know, and even that win was close. But I think we need a response against Nottingham after that 8-0 demolishing that we took. And like you said, Paul Lord's got a lot to think about in terms of coaching and team selection, because hopefully we get a full squad back with Curly returning from injury and the same with Brian. But Lord had a good weekend, so what does he do? Does he rest the player? Does he play himself, or does he play a full lineup and mix the lines up again? You know, it's going to be a difficult game, and Nottingham got our number, so I'm not optimistic about this one.
I think one key thing to think about in that is that Nottingham's best asset is that they change their game plan very, very well on the fly, and they make good decisions in game. Their in-game management is excellent with having the Rick Strachan and Corey Nielsen both on the bench. I think this is a game that Andrew Lord has to stand on the bench and make those in-game decisions.
Wasn't he on the bench for the 8-0 loss, though?
He was. It didn't work then, but I think since then, it has worked to varying degrees. But we've seen things like the third period against Coventry, where, you know, short on the bench, roll different lines. You know, very similar happened towards the end of the game against Sheffield. To a lesser degree, towards the end, we shortened it down. I think Andrew Lord's become a bit more flexible over the Christmas period, as shown him that your lines can change around during the game. We've seen it probably more from him in the last month than we did in the last two seasons in terms of on-the-fly lines being changed. But he can't do it from the ice. He physically can't do it. If he wants to play against Sheffield, he benched himself for the last 5-10 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think is a shame, because he's a good enough player to be out there. But he realised he can't shorten the bench and make those calls while he's also busting a gut for 30, 40 seconds on the ice. So you're then another import down. So if in a tight game he is going to bench himself and you've got a fit squad, you have to bench him from the start, because otherwise you're putting yourself in a position where if it's tight and you need everyone, you're going to be a player down automatically or a coach down. So yeah. I do agree with Sean, and I think he needs to be on the bench, but I think if we've still got the injuries, I think he plays for me. I think.
Yeah, oh, agreed, yeah.
You know, we discussed earlier in the season that we might rather run one in Port Down and have a bench coach, but I think against Nottingham, we want everybody we can get, and obviously there's still the possibility of Andrew Hotham, and I hope it's not a possibility, but Joey Martin in front of Dobbs could be missing games, so it's could be even tougher than we're talking about, missing Andrew Hotham, who logs crazy amount of minutes for the Devils, and would be a big loss, both offensively and in terms of special teams, if he was out. And we're talking about a different, difficult game, and then we're going to go to Fife, and Fife seem to really always get us at points where you think that becomes a banana skin game. Third game of a triple header, the middle of that weird little run with two Sheffield games and Belfast away at the end of last season where they beat us. And you're another game where Fife are going to look at at what we're doing and say, we're in the shout here. And a really tough game coming up for the Devils, Sean.
Yeah, for certain. They've got a very, very good team. They've got guys like Brian Dingle, and Brendan Brooks seems to be having a very good year there. Rick Jackman. Their goaltender, Shane Owen, is excellent. After picking up a win in Nottingham as well last Sunday, they're going to be full of confidence. Depending on how their game goes on Saturday, I don't know exactly who they're playing. I'm just going to look that one up now. But it's going to be a like you said, they're going to look at that game and think, oh yeah, we could be in with a shot with this one. And they've beaten us up there, as you said, on the triple header. They play in Brayhead, so they haven't got a lot of travel either. So they'll be fighting it out for their conference title up there with Brayhead. So if they get another result in the shopping centre, then they're going to be coming into that game full of confidence.
I just do want to make, before as well, and make a quick point. When I said they're going to be looking at it because of our schedule, that's not the little Fife. They are sitting fourth, fifth in the league at the moment and have done all year. I do realise that we don't have any Fife listeners anymore after my they only win 1-10 comment at the start of last season, which I think saw the last of them off. So apologies for that. So I do want to make it clear that they are sitting fourth in the table on merit, and that means that by right it is going to be a difficult game for us. So even without the fact of the travel Sunday morning and having to play Nottingham the night before. But a difficult game, Aaron, but as we could probably say for everything, it's a game that we really need to be looking for maximum points in.
Well, yeah, definitely, Paul. We've got that difficult home game against Nottingham. If we can build some confidence from that and take it up to Fife with us, that'd be all a bonus. But it could go the flip side, and, we could use a lot of energy, and we could have tired guys making that long journey up to Fife. So it's going to be a difficult one either way. But I don't want to be, pessimistic, but this weekend, I don't think it's going to suit us, and I'd love it if we can take the four, but I think it all rides on the Nottingham game. I think if we win the Nottingham game, we can get 4 points. If we lose the Nottingham game, I can't see us winning on Sunday. And that would be a disaster.
Yeah, I think having any game we go this year where you're going to have one or 0 point weekends is going to hurt you in the long run. I think that'll be the case for ourselves and Belfast between now and the end of the year. So, yeah. We just need to stop saying big weekends because, like I said, that is...
They're all big. Weekend. They're all big.
Hopefully they're all going to stay big. The only way they won't be big is if it goes very wrong.
Or if we win it early. Woohoo!
That'd be nice. Let's just win out from you.
Please. Yeah, let's just win out from you. Get it done with. It's too stressful, this big weekend malarkey.
Don't want a stressful last weekend. They're just, we've had a couple of those. They're no fun. Let's do it easily. Right, that's what we've got coming up. We did say that we were going to have a very quick sort of chat around sort of new signings in a dream world. If you could sign another player from around the league, and we're not going silly. We know we're not going to get a Matthew Rahr or anyone, Blair Riley from Belfast. Players like Colton Frett is not moving. So whilst you want them, within reason. So, you know, looking at either those lower line players, maybe players from the other conference who you might think you'd have a chance with. And it's probably more of a chat around styles of players rather than actual players. But Sean, what, you know, what is the one player that you would want, you know, that they're bringing there that you think we need?
A realistic one? We're going with the realistic ones, you said, yeah?
I think realistic, because otherwise it's just going to be, you know.
Okay. So if someone that in the summer, I could say we've got a pretty good chance of signing them, yeah?
Yeah. If we could sign them in the summer, I think they'd be eligible for this.
Okay. I think another Brit, because I think if you take imports, then imports are 10 a penny. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of imports out there. The next Joey Martin is just waiting to be found, basically. And so is the next Matthew Waugh. So I'm going to go with a Brit. And I'm going to go with Luke Ferreira from Sheffield. We had him for, I think it was one game a couple of seasons ago, scored in his only game in Belfast. And I thought we should have signed him there and then. And he's proven to be a real asset to Sheffield. He had an assist on their go-ahead goal from Jonathan Phillips in the from their goal on Jonathan Phillips, which on the weekend. And yeah, I think he would bring a bit of speed, some youth, and I think he could do a great job for us. So yeah, I'm going to go with Luke Ferreira.
And you know, obviously you've said player that we could feasibly sign in the summer. Is that a player for you that would make enough of a difference to us now that you think that could be the difference between us getting the title and not getting the title?
Well, yeah, you look at the scorers for Sheffield over the weekend. Of course, you got guys like Colton Fletcher up there, but then you got one from Jonathan Phillips, who's obviously a seasoned Brit. I didn't want to go with a veteran Brit, and Jonathan Phillips isn't going anywhere, so. The assist from Luke Ferreira on there, just chipping in with the odd point now and again. We've got two very, very good British defencemen in Josh Batchelor and Mark Richardson, and obviously our British goaltender. But we seem to lack just that British forward that will chip in with the odd point you're there. Someone, you know, just for a bit of context, my second would have been Barry McKenzie. You know, he seems settled up in Brayhead now, but when he signed for us a couple of years ago from Edinburgh, it was a good signing for me. It was another big British addition. And, yeah, I think it would just add that extra little bit of depth to our offence and give us some more.
Yeah, I've got Aaron. We'll ask Aaron next, because I know that you had a few thoughts. I think Luke Ferreira was someone that you've mentioned off air as well.
Yeah, it depends when we're looking to go for it. I think if it's someone we're looking to sign in the summer, definitely a young British player like your Luke Ferreira's, and you know, even Robert Farmer, you know, he's a little bit older, but he's still, I think he's a fantastic player. He puts the points up as well. So, but that's in the summer. If we're talking about now, someone to turn the season round for us, well, not around, but you know, give us that little bit of spark and a kick up the bum, it'd be, for me, you know, Sean mentioned him off here. It'd be Matt Becker. I'm just looking at the stats now. He's up there, top goal scorer. He is the most point scorer. And he's got, I think he's up there with the most game-winning goals. So, you know, that tells me that he's the type of player that, like, grab the game by, the nuts and go out and win it for Brayhead. So if we could poach him, That would be a dream signing for me, because that's the type of player we need. We need someone who's a little bit of a rink rat and can score goals. And he doesn't take a lot of penalty minutes either. So that's why I'd be looking. But, you know, I know nothing.
Horrible player. Absolutely horrible player. But if you had said, Aaron, if we were looking at in the middle of the season, then someone in that mould would have been 100% my idea as well, because he's a horrible player.
We were
playing
someone in the middle of the season, Sean. You did ask the question.
Well, I went with the summer option. So
I'm torn. You know, Matt Becker. I think Matt Becker is someone that you probably wouldn't ever tempt mid-season. Brayhead have got quite a bit of money. So the one that jumped out to me, looking, you know, at the point scorers around the league is Darren Dzinski. Would never be signed off by Todd because you'd have to pronounce him every time at the start of the game when he scored. So if I was him, I wouldn't have him either. But I do actually think that someone like a Luke Ferreira would potentially be enough to get us over the line, because I think we are good enough. I think the last 2 or 3 weeks, Lord has moved to shorten the bench a little bit earlier. I think the ice time for Chris Jones and Luke Pigott has dropped drastically. I think they're both down to 1 or 2 shifts a game. That's not a fourth line. I don't think it's unfair. I think the quality of the league, I think, has stepped up again, and I think those two haven't necessarily stepped up. They're not chipping in with the odd points that Sean was talking about. They're not really trusted with the important minutes. I think a guy like Luke Ferreira could be that guy that gives you the confidence to run 4 solid lines for 40, 50 minutes during a game and then shorten the bench rather than, we're doing it 30 minutes into games at the moment. I'm sort of kind of on the fence. I think, hand on heart, I think a guy like Dzinski would make more of a difference, but I think a guy like Luke Ferreira, in terms of the long run, getting a guy like that, and also, I just think it would give us the depth to run 4 lines consistently. And I think, we're far enough out from the end of the season, we would still see the benefit from that, of being able to share the load a little bit better amongst our forwards. No disrespect to the current players, but I do just think that, as Sean said, you just look at Sheffield scoring, the number, the fact that they've got guys like Jonathan Phillip and Luke Ferreira, and then above them you've got Robert Dowd playing as a forward as well. They're 3 forwards that are probably putting points up that Matthew Mizer is going to get close to it, but our other British forwards are not going to. I think another name would be a Ben Davis. Could do the exact same type of thing, but doesn't have age on his side. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think something definitely that we'd be really interested in knowing what you are listeners think about it. Let's not get ahead. I know there are people on social media say you should never talk about new players because it'll make other players sad, but it's just a bit of a hypothetical. It's not going to happen. If we do get a new sign, I think it's safe to say they're not going to be coming from the league because no one's going to be signing over ITC cards or anything like that to the Devils.
I don't know. I think if Edinburgh could give us Jacob Johnston, I wouldn't say no.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that he necessarily would. But
any of them. But you know what I mean.
Let's do a Sheffield. Let's go and take.
Let's go and take Edinburgh's best player, and then let's do a Belfast and take their second best player. Let's just do it.
Take both. Do be Belfast and Sheffield this year. Let's just be Sheffield and win the league. Let's not take players. Let's just win the league. Right. Well, Sean, Aaron, unless there's anything else from either of you, I think we may be done.
Nope. No AOB.
That's beautiful silence as us being done. So thank you, everyone, for listening again. Please do share the podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Please let us know your thoughts on the show. And most importantly, share your Rahmites as we go through the weekend against Nottingham and Fife. But for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devil inside.